stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
Guaranteed to be more random than Braun Strowman's tag team partner at WrestleMania. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
You are the world champion!
I see what he did there. He had to get a WrestleMania reference in, didn't he? Welcome
the showcase
to
Showcase of the Immortals, the ultimate showcase in sports and entertainment. The time where we praise our great overlords at Mother's Car Polish. Praise be to Mothers.
And in other news, welcome to episode 131 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighbourhood host, Mr. Andre Harrison. And, oh my god, everything went down in Motorsport this weekend. Holy shit. Good news, kids. This is the first part of a doubleheader that will be coming your way this week. There was just too much bursting at the seams in Formula 2 and Formula 1. So much so, Formula 2 is leading off this week. It's the NXT takeover of motorsport shows this past weekend. We have a four-person booth for this week's episode, featuring me, of course, Mr. Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Hey. All hail our new Lord and Savior, Nicholas, wherever you are. Don't let wrestling corrupt you. Be pure.
This is Wrestling King. That might be easier said than done. He's probably on steroids right now. He doesn't even know it yet.
But does he know how to bust someone up at the top of their head hard way?
I don't know. Question. I don't know. Ask the pool of blood that Roman Reigns was resounded in yesterday, I suppose. But in the meantime, he can also take six F5s. It's RJ O'Connell.
Oh, yes. And I had a very interesting perspective of all the weekend's action because I, after 2.5 years of friendship, finally got to hang out with our friend of the show, Sarah Connors, for a whole weekend. It was everything that I could have imagined more. It was a great time, and I've just missed the whole time. It's great. I miss my friends so much.
I still find it crazy that I ended up hanging out with Sarah like a year and a half before you did. You guys are in the States. Like, it's crazy. But I was very, very lucky for that one. I bumped into Sarah twice now. And met our good friend Hazel before I even got to know her as a proper friend. It's crazy how these things turn out. Motorsport. It brings people together and causes them to fight like rabbits. Finally, as well, we also have Chris DeHarde back with us. Hi, Chris, how you doing?
Good. Hope you got the show ready because this is going to be jam packed. We had so much action, and you mentioned WrestleMania. This weekend was actually my very first WrestleMania and my first wrestling pay per view. So it led to some very, very fun conversations over the preceding night.
So are you now fully aboard the meme wagon that is John Cena running up an entrance ramp?
Yes, 100%.
I'm here for all of that. That's all I will say. I'm not going to give away too much because people may not have watched it by the time this goes up. Because let's be honest, especially if you're in the UK, which a lot of our listeners are from, that show finished at about 5 a.m. So yeah, probably not the best way to digest a 17-hour wrestling show. But I'm not going to waste any more time. We're going to crack the general housekeeping out of the way, and then we'll get right into it. But places you can find us, we're on youtube.com/motorsport101. More videos coming out very soon. I've managed to whip Nora into shape, so hopefully there'll be some more podcast highlights coming up in the near future. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101, where I crack shit jokes about motorsport. It's always a fun time. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101, and if you want to follow our personal accounts, we are at Harrison101HD, at RyanEricKing, when he's on there every once in a while, at RJ O'Connell, and at C the Harde, at CDEHARDE. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. Just $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live, which will also be back later in this week. It was the Argentina Grand Prix, and absolutely nothing of interest happened. Seriously.
It was more
nothing.
Like Bahrain said, we raised the bar for what it means to have an exceptional Grand Prix. And then MotoGP was like, we are the bar.
Very, very true. Let's okay, to put it into perspective, people, if you have not seen that MotoGP race yet, all I will say is this. Jack Miller finishing in fourth was about the 15th craziest thing that happened during that race. There's some perspective for you, kids. If you've never listened to Bike Live, trust me on this one. You're going to want to listen to this week's show. I promise. Like, make time in your schedule for it. I promise you. Like, I will put it on Patreon for $1 early access that all Patreon backers get in. I want you all to listen to this show. You heard that here first from me. Got it? Good. Right. So, without further ado, after this brief musical interlude, you'll be back to talk about... Wait, the schedule says Formula 2. Oh, wait, Formula 2 was amazing. Let's get into that right after this. King did make a very good point. When isn't Formula 2 awesome? That's kind of my fault for not watching it properly. And yeah, I openly admit, I was wrong. I was wrong. Very, very wrong. Formula 2's 2018 season kicked off in Bahrain this weekend. And
with
it was incredible.
With
a new
car.
Partly,
yeah, new car. That's the most important thing to open with. That there's a new formula in Formula 2. They have dropped the V8s. You cry elsewhere because the new engine is a turbocharged V6 engine that shoots motherfucking flames.
Like,
bam!
I hear F1 fans really like it when they go from V8s to turbocharged V6s. Nothing ever goes wrong with that.
And they're also larger rear wings. They have the low nose that is common in current Formula 1 cars. Believe it or not, the current cars... Due to, they're actually, I think, believe 8 pounds heavier, but they're give or take about the same speed as last year's cars.
That's like 1 foot English breakfast. 8 pounds is nothing, right? So, you know, so like these cars literally were spitting flames. I saw RJ post one in our Discord chat just before we started the show, and yeah, they are literally spitting flames. Like, they are ridiculous. They look fantastic, by the way. I love them. Anyone still complaining about the Halo can fight me, basically, at this point, because, like, I didn't even friggin' notice, but these new cars...
It looks good on the car. It looks very good on the car, and it's a platform that needed to be updated after about 45 years of the GP211 chassis.
Yes. Yeah, that old sucker been around for a while, so, yeah. New cars...
Did you know that the great Johnny Servoz-Gavin won the Formula 2 championship in a GP211? Not many people do that.
Did you know that the GP211 actually predates this show?
Oh, dear God. And our first show was, what, October 2014, I want to say that was?
Yeah, the 11 stands for a year.
Oh, dear God. Like... Our first show was like 3 years after the old chassis was around. I feel old. I feel really old now. I'm not even the oldest guy on this show. I'm the second youngest on this show. I'm 26 in August. Oh, Jesus. Should we get into some of the racing, fellas? Yes, because we started off... Yeah, it would be a good idea on this show every once in a while. So... I love that in the setlist, King wrote out, it says, Lando is definitely the Mando. And I'm like, there's our episode title. No, I'm joking. But, yeah, Lando Norris, in his Formula 2 debut, secured pole position just over by a narrow margin over George Russell by 0.06 of a second there. Very close. But turns out in the feature race itself, Lando Norris took off. He was gone. He was gone very quickly, and he would not be seen again for the majority of the race. No doubt about it, King. A stunning first performance for Lando Norris in the feature race.
I would say not against all odds, but against some odds, he was still able to win the race. Like, he comfortably drove away from the field, 9-second lead by lap 9. Pit stop, he had an issue with one of the tires had problem. You know, coming off the car, still wasn't an issue. After the pit stop, over the radio, you could hear him say, pretty much saying that his engine was, you know, occasionally, like, just shutting off. But, you know, still wins by 8.3 seconds.
No big deal, you know. Only in your first Formula 2 race and all. Jesus, Lando. Give everybody else a chance. But, funnily enough, like, Norris was fantastic. No doubt about it. But this really wasn't the story here. I mean, George Russell was hyped up as a big threat. Spun his wheels on the start, and like Lando was gone after that one. Essentially, he had about a 1 second lead by sector two, as if that wasn't bad enough as it was. But the let's be honest here with each other: the real story of the feature race, and probably the weekend in general, was Artem goddamn Markelov. Holy shit!
To sum up Markelov's weekend in like one little moment. It was probably, like, if Markelov showed up to a poker game and the first hand he was dealt was, like, a pair of, like, twos, and everyone else had, like, somehow had straight flushes, and he was like, fuck this, pulls a handgun, takes the money, and runs out the roof.
Like, who's going to argue with him? Like, he was only able to qualify in 17th. He only had limited running in practice. The Russian time team had technical gremlins throughout the weekend, unfortunately. But the car held itself together during the races itself. And after just 10 laps, after starting, what was it, in the pit lane? Because I think he stalled it on the formation lap, didn't he?
He stalled it on the formation lap. Roberto Merri didn't even get to start the race. By the way, Roberto Merri is racing in Formula 2 this year.
Yeah, this is weird.
And he also almost got to wear his overalls from Manor, and the only reason why he couldn't was because it didn't have a Formula 2 logo that they could just sew on top of it.
Oh my god.
Nice to see Merri holds on to the important things in life.
My recollection of what I saw when I was, like, so sleep-deprived from waking up at about 6:37 in the morning, Artem Markelov started the race in pit lane and then just decided to claw, scratch, and tear and chop his way through everybody and everything in his way.
Yeah, like, quote from the set list that I wrote, Markelov was able to slay his way to 8th after 10 laps.
God. King, I've known you for nearly 7 years. That is the sassiest thing you've ever written. Congratulations. But, not inaccurate in any way, shape, or form, may I add. That's exactly what he did. He scythed his way through the field. Some spectacular overtakes in there as well. Like, Artem Markelov doesn't have a fear. Like, he is fearless. There is no concept of failure in this man's mind. Like, it might be a 2% pass, but if you stuck Artem Markelov in Alex Rossi's car during like the final two laps of St. Petersburg, he would find a way to slide past Wickens and not take him out. Markelov is ridiculous.
He is the YouTube highlight video personified.
Yeah, he is. I always think of, like, the fourth-year fun ruiner in GP2 days whenever you have, like, some dude that's stuck around a while and only wins the championship because of that way. The fourth-year fun ruiner that ruins all the fun for all the rookies. Well, if that's the case, then Artem Markelov in his fifth season, he is the fifth-year extra-fun haver.
He's a super senior.
Good lord. I mean, this is year five for Markelov, and, you know, it doesn't feel like year five, I have to say. It doesn't feel like year five for Markelov, but my gosh, like, if anything, Markelov was so spectacular, I'm starting to, like, reassess my stance on people being in Formula 2 for longer than, like, one or two seasons, because we all know the bottleneck to get into F1 is virtually impossible now unless you're sucked in by a junior team, like, right from the start, like we saw with someone like Stoffel. Yeah, for instance.
Which Markelov is currently on.
Yep.
Yes.
He's a reserve driver for Renault.
Good lord. Like, of all the teams you get to be a junior for right now, the one that is absolutely stacked with Nico Hülkenberg and Carlos Sainz as teammates. Yeah. Shout out of luck on that one, eh, Artem? Jeez. Yeah.
Well, I think the climax of Markelov's living highlight vid was the closing laps and his battle against Lando Norris's teammate Sergio Sete Câmara.
That was ridiculous. That was bonkers. I thought they were going to kill each other out there. Fun fact, I was watching this race in a Greasy Spoon Cafe with my mother on my phone, and I nearly screamed, "Oh my God!" towards the end of that race, and the whole cafe gave me very, very, very strange looks. Sorry about that, people. If you were having a nice traditional English breakfast and you hear a crazy 6 foot two, 250-pound black man screaming, "Oh my God!" while looking at his phone. That battle was, shall we say, intense?
I'm about to go pull it up right now.
It featured dive bombs. Like, penultimate lap pretty much opens with Markelov going for the move to hopefully cement his status of, I started from the pit lane, I'm going to finish second. But unfortunately, Câmara sees it coming, because that was kind of one of Markelov's go-to moves of, I'm a dive bomb in the first corner. Sete Câmara moves in anticipation. Markelov backs out at the last possible moment.
Like, Markelov got out-ballsed. That takes some doing. Like, it's a bit like showing up to the fight with two melons and then Câmara pulls out two watermelons. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. And if anybody is disappointed that Felipe Massa's retired and, you know, we're wondering where the next Brazilian F1 superstar is coming from, Carlin may have him.
Yeah, Carlin may have him. Câmara, obviously he was in qualifying. He ended up qualifying 6/4 behind his teammate. But he's clearly showing that he's not going to simply just sit around and be Lando Norris's number two driver. He's here to play.
No.
He is indeed.
Yeah, remember in the when we did our fantasy draft last year, and I believe Sergio Sete Câmara, did he not get picked? And that was the race, and that was the start of the year where he started really clicking things off. Like,
yeah, it was. Yeah, he went undrafted as I spent $775 on a Matsushita.
That is Super Formula superstar Nobuhiro Matsushita now. It's fine.
Who did fuck all for me on my team? So thanks a bunch for that, mate.
We go down to the rundown to start the final lap, and Markelov's got the RS camera, obviously doesn't. And
yeah, which
seems,
I'm watching right now.
And pretty much, Markelov looks one way, camera moves over, Markelov looks the other way, camera can't commit fully, but he starts pushing him towards the pit wall, and oh my god. It's harder to tell whether Markelov is closer to camera or the pit wall, and somehow they both make it out unscathed.
Oh no, this is fantastic, and this lap isn't even one third over. My god.
Yeah, it was like watching like that time when Michael Schumacher almost squeezed Rubens into the wall, only for an entire lap.
Yeah, only for an entire... Like, they clearly wanted to try to show each other the chrome horn, but they knew if they touched, it would be over for both of them.
Give him the horn. it is a tremendous fight. Go out of your way to see that feature race in full. It is an incredible spectacle. Markelov alone is worth the price of admission here. Câmara had balls the size of grapefruits. In fact, if you look very closely, the whole race might be on YouTube. Hopefully it's still up there by the time this podcast goes out before the FOM inevitably swings its ban hammer when it finds out it's on there.
But hey, if Câmara and Markelov wanted to like, do this like for the rest of the season, maybe forever, like I want to see them literally fight forever, please, please.
Let's just say if that happens, like I will never need a girlfriend in my life.
will we go as far ever. As to say that this is the best open wheel race we've seen in Bahrain, either among any of the open wheel categories that we've seen there?
It's up there with Bahrain 2014 for me, because that was a fantastic F1 race.
I'd say it's a tie. I'd say it's a tie between that race and this race. I'd put them level.
I actually found Formula 2 to be a bit more exciting than that 2014 Bahrain race, to be honest with you.
I would say the only thing that didn't put it over the top, that it wasn't for the win. But even, like, even including Lando's drive, it's still a great race. The fact that Lando was still able to maintain that 9-second lead despite all the issues he had through the race.
Can I also just point out, as revealed by Carlin, Lando Norris, this is not entirely statistically accurate, but in his first full season of what is now British Formula 4, and then European Formula 3, and then British Formula 3, and then Formula 2, he's won his first race as a full-time competitor.
Yes.
In all four of these categories.
Like, we should also...
He's a bit good.
We should also include the last five championships he's been in. The first year he's won all of those championships.
See, in other words, you're saying he's a bit good, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, the hype is very much real with Lando. Not quite the same level of success in the sprint race, but oh god, Markelov won that one too with a tire saving masterclass. God damn it!
Yeah, Lando ended up, obviously, the way they format the sprint race is if you finish eighth, you start first. If you finish first, you start eighth. Lando was able to make his way up to fourth. Markelov, with his third place, you know, finish, ends up starting sixth. Fights his way, as Markelov does, wins the race. Camera ends up finishing third. And in second place is our good friend Maximilian Günther.
Your man's.
Yeah.
Your man's in the pink car. Yes, Max Günther drove very... Like, I love that Max Günther was doubting his own ability during that race on several occasions to save those tyres. But he drove magnificently. He got better as the race went on. It was crazy.
When you're out there with dudes like Lando Norris and Artem Markelov, you would doubt your own ability too.
Yeah. I guess it's as fair a reason as any, but God.
And also, apparently, ART Grand Prix are canceled. They had a pretty good race one, and then in the sprint, oh no, what happened?
The collapse was real.
Both their cars stall on the sprint race start. It's like, oh god. ART is cancelled. Shut it down. Shut it all down.
The proverbial British dream team of George Russell and Jack Aitken. Like, Russell qualified second, but his start was atrocious. He just spun up his tires and fell down the field. He ended up finishing fifth, you know, salvaging that. But in the... Aitken finished ninth, which, you know, it was good, but it's not what people were expecting. And then the sprint was just terrible.
Both cars stall it on like, it looks like these new cars are a bitch to get off the line by the looks of it, but both ARTs stall it on the race to start. Yeah. And
launches are going to be extremely difficult in this car because, number one, they're not hybrid systems. They shoot flames for a reason. It's the anti-lag system. These cars are heavier. They don't accelerate as quickly from a standstill. So, like, it's noticeable because Markelov is the only veteran that's doing well.
It's a good point.
Like, experience means nothing with this new car now.
Yeah, just look at Sean Galale, who only managed a 7th place in the feature race and did nothing in the sprint. And he's with Prima.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of says it all, really.
So we get to do this all again in Baku in about 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, it's gonna be alright.
Yeah, just hopefully these guys will actually have a decent start, unlike the last time they were in Baku. And hopefully Leclerc doesn't just run away with it, you know? But, oh boy. Like I said, both races absolutely ridiculous. The sprint race a little bit more on the tame side. Probably for the best, otherwise I may have had a heart attack during that weekend. Just besides that, a mental weekend. Also, shout out to the Russian Time YouTube channel, which had their team principal Svetlana holding both her trophies. Not in that sense. Like,
oh my God.
I was covering myself there because I knew somebody was thinking it.
Yep.
Not like that. The actual trophies that Markelov got for first and third, like they were two, like, school kids trying to fight each other. So I thought that was quite funny as well. Thanks, Hazel, for pointing that one out on Twitter. Did the Lord's work covering that weekend on there.
But as we stand, the driver standings feature Lando Norris, first in the championship, 39 points. Second,
All shocked.
Second, Artem Markelov with 30 points. Third, Sergio Sete Camara with 28 points. Fourth, Maximilian Gunther with 16, tied with Nick DeVries. Gunther ahead with a second place finish.
Like, shout out to Nick DeVries and Prima for what I got to call the premature Leclerc strategy during that sprint race of, yeah, we're going to take a pit during the sprint race again, only this time it just didn't quite work as well, and Nick basically ran out of tyres with about five to go on that one, only finished in fifth. Well worth a mention. Nice effort, Prima. Sadly, Nick is not Charles Leclerc. But then again, that's, you know, a lot of people aren't Charles Leclerc in a Formula 2 car. There's no shame in that, Nick. Don't worry. There's always time to make up for that. You're good. You're doing a good job, mate. Trust me. So yeah, if you haven't already, as mentioned, check out Formula 2. I also love that Zoe just put in the Discord like awkward Jim Clark intro mention. Yeesh.
We should mention that. How
we should.
The Formula 2 broadcast did not start with the greatest of introductions by social media-less commentator Alex Jakes.
Otherwise known as Maurice Moss from the IT Crowd, because that's what he talks like.
Where he pretty much introduces the feature race as the 50th anniversary of Jim Clark's last Formula 2 race, and you, me, and everyone else knows why that was Jim Clark's last Formula 2 race. And that is kind of awkward to mention before the start of, you know, a Formula 2 race.
The first race in a brand new era for the sport as well. I mean, jeez, Alex. Like, were you practicing that one in the hotel room? And also, one more thing. Whose good idea was it? Whose bright idea was it to put Johnny Herbert in the commentary box during the sprint race?
Sky. Because for the first time ever, Sky, before the broadcast, if you're watching on Sky Sports F1, did like a mini 5-minute pre-race show. Like, they've never done any Formula 2 specific coverage ever.
Yay, I guess. It's an improvement.
That's neat.
And to be fair, like, Herbert actually kind of just sat back and took that third role on quite well. I thought Herbert was fine, so, you know. All right, Sky, you get a pass on this one.
Yeah, because Johnny Herbert is actually a race winner in the category back when it was known as International Formula 3000.
Attaboy. So, yeah, shout out to Johnny Herbert, because he's always fun, right? You know, apples and pears and all that.
Failed to qualify at Indy once.
Did not go well.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, shall we get into the main event of the evening? Yes, apparently the Bahrain Grand Prix was pretty good, actually. I can't be cynical about overtaking and stuff. That's really annoying. I've got to talk about the actual race. Damn it. I'll prepare myself for that after this brief musical interlude. Speaking on behalf of Andre Harrison is a statement from his lawyer. Well, on behalf of my client, Andre Harrison, I would like to address the 17 people who got in his mentions after this race, insisting that Dre re-engages his steady diet of Ferrari-induced narcotics after Sebastian Vettel's unprecedented second consecutive win this season. He would like to address these concerns by saying that he is not doing this shit again. Like, sincerely yours, Andre Harrison Sr., Andre Harrison's lawyer.
Dre, you sound a lot like your lawyer.
I don't know, like whatever gave you that idea? All But...
Bahrain, the duel in the desert. A tradition unlike any other, because it is Masters Weekend after all.
Oh, yeah, that did happen. That did happen.
Shout out to Patrick Reed.
Yes. Hello, friends. Welcome to Bahrain.
Like, yeah, like, hopefully, like, this... Oh, God, I don't know what I was going to say now, but it's like... It was a very good race. Like, I was like... It was like... Like, I said on Twitter, and I kind of half-joked, but I actually kind of meant it when I said, I think Bahrain's now a serious top five best track on the calendar now these days.
It is.
And it delivers. It does deliver good races. We got it in 2014. 2015 was pretty good. 2017 was pretty good. And this one was very good. I thought this was a fantastic race. And one that was riddled... It had a little bit of everything, if you ask me. We had some quality overtakes. We had some drama. We had some unexpectedly high running. And a battle to the flag, which I thought was incredible. And a genuine surprise, King. Well, what do you mean Lewis Hamilton didn't put it on pole?
What do you mean Lewis Hamilton wasn't in contention in that last battle for the flag?
You know how shocked I was at that? I shit myself. I was like, wait a minute. Sebastian Vettel was the only man in the 137s? This is lit! Like, I literally, when I found out he got pole position, I was watching it live. When I realized he had got pole position, I literally got off my bed, threw my fist to the ground and shouted, "Party mode, that motherfucker!"
And we do have to mention that for various reasons, we'll talk about the race start later. But in qualifying, Lewis Hamilton had a fresh gearbox.
So he is already starting with a 5 grid place handicap before he even takes a lap.
And he qualified in 4th, which ended up putting him on row 5. A 9th place start, which, you know, it would have been 6th at best, but a 6th place would have put him on row 3. It's a huge difference there, but he ended up qualifying in 4th on the road, even being out-qualified by his teammate, which knocked him back to 9th afterwards. And Sebastian Vettel celebrated his 51st career pole position in what would later be his 200th race start, believe it or not. He's now in the 200 club.
I feel very old now.
Yeah. Yes, extremely. Like, he's 31 in a couple of months' time, and I'm like, fuck me, he's been around this long already?
Yeah, I remember when he was that fresh face kid at BMW.
He was, what, 19 back then, wasn't he? Yeah. Was he 18?
He was the youngest point scorer in F1 history at one time.
Fucking Max. Actually, no, take it back. It was actually Daniil Kvyat that broke that record first, funnily enough. Yeah, yeah, Kvyat broke it first. I do remember that.
And speaking of Max, people always said that the Red Bull Tag Heuer Renault engine needed a little more power to catch up to the competition. Well, Max got it. Got it all in one corner.
Yeah, like, if you ever played Scale Electric before, and it's like you've come out of the apex of a corner and you've immediately put your thumb all the way down on the trigger, that's basically what happened to Max Verstappen. Puts a wheel on the curb. According to him and the Red Bull team, he got a sudden jolt of an extra 150 horsepower coming out of that turn one apex. And when he had the rear wheel on the curb at turn two, which, to be fair, it caused a lot of problems that weekend, Marcus Ericsson... and I think one of the Williams had a similar spin out there on that turn two curb on the outside, had caused some spins all weekend long. Max had one of his own, put it in the wall, and I think he qualified, was it 15th in the end?
Yes, 15th in the end, and gave us a great radio quote, simply F.
Yeah. Like, all I will say is to whoever manages the race directions team radio, very well-timed bleeps, sir. Well done. Like,
you could just catch enough of it to know exactly what he's saying, but without actually, you know, getting cross-broadcast, because, you know, that's subject to fines. I enjoyed this in a full hotel room with friends. We had a mimosa party, just orange juice and champagne, except the orange juice was a saga. Because Sarah actually went down to the hotel lobby to get the orange juice, which we had delivered to us, and then got stuck in an elevator for a good half an hour.
Oh my god!
Apparently she doesn't lift.
Only you guys. Next time, Sarah, take the stairs, for God's sake.
all 27 flights of it.
On second thought, maybe not. I'd probably just stick
in
the lift.
In fairness, the mimosas were very delicious. Simply Orange matches very well with Andre.
Come again?
Yes. Yes, the champagne was named Andre. So in spirit, you were with us. although I was thinking,
literally,
like, is it named after Andre 3000 because we're getting these in Atlanta? I really wish.
But well played, RJ. Well played. Well played.
Spirit. Well done, RJ. Well done.
So we ended up with Ferrari's first front row lockout.
Nice.
Like, since when? Like, I don't remember when their last front row lockout was.
I believe it was Monaco last season. They were first and second, only with Raikkonen starting from pole. But it was their first 1-2 in Bahrain since 2004.
Oh my god!
And to put that into perspective, McLaren Mercedes were a very unreliable team at that time. Well, not much has changed.
Yeah, well, you say that, but they're now third in the Constructors' Championship and they've had all four of their cars finishing the points so far this season. Funny how things turn out. More on that later. But, yes, race day. Seb gets a great start from the pole position, no problem. And I'm thinking, hey, we can maybe have Raikkonen as a blocker. No, Valtteri Bottas sweeps around the outside and I'm like, oh, for God's sake, Kimmy. Kimmy, why do you always let me down? Why? Why do you do this? It's like, great, we haven't got a blocker in front of us now. And I thought, okay, this could be another cool, like, pincer movement sort of thing, but not really a pincer movement because King doesn't like it when I use that term. Another two against one fight, basically, with Ferrari and Mercedes, and this time it was Bottas at the front. Nope! Turns out Lewis Hamilton was, surprise, surprise, very quick indeed. You're all shocked, really. I mean, you know. And a not-so-ambitious, but still very quick, one-stop strategy was pretty much rattled in from the start because he started on the soft compound tyre. If you haven't seen it already, like, the whole highlight is up on the F1 YouTube channel in full. A triple overtake down the front straight, very similar to Daniel Ricciardo's move at Baku last year. We actually ended up winning the award for pass of the year last year in F1. A triple overtake on, I think it was Hulkenberg, Ocon, and it was a McLaren. I want to say it was Fernando. I could be wrong on that. Don't quote me on that one. But a triple overtake into turn one.
Ridiculous. It started off hot and heavy. Madison, I believe Esteban Ocon touched wheels, and I thought that was Madison's race done and dusted from there. No, he keeps on trucking. We'll get to him later. Would this be a good segue to talk about Lewis Hamilton versus Max Verstappen?
Yes, this is a big one. One of the big early race highlights. Verstappen gets side by side with Hamilton on the DRS zone into turn one. Verstappen, it's a narrow one, but he seems to have like a nose. Maybe they're going side by side through the turn one apex, and then Verstappen runs Hamilton off the road. They make contact. For once, Verstappen didn't come out of it the better. He got a puncture as a result of the contact made between him and Hamilton. Hamilton was able to continue scot-free. Verstappen had a puncture, and on the way back to the pits, his car lost all drive, and Verstappen was done for the day.
And that was...
This is a bit...
Yeah.
No. You're mixing up a couple stories. Verstappen did make it back to the pit lane, got a fresh pair of tires, but on his way back to the pit lane, Daniel Ricciardo was stopped on the side of the road because he had lost all drive.
Yeah, like, it's like I think Martin described it as it's like someone had just hit the master switch. Like, Ricciardo's car just completely shut down.
This is Ricciardo's fourth DNF in the last six races. This is Red Bull's first double retirement since the 2010 Korean Grand Prix, ending a 38-race point streak, the longest active streak in F1 for a single constructor.
Damn.
Ouch. And like I heard Daniel describe it after the races. He said it's like his heart had been ripped out. Red Bull was apparently adamant that Daniel Ricciardo could have challenged with Hamilton for a podium position on the race. They were very confident in their race pace. Sadly, we didn't get to experience it because Verstappen was caught in the midfield and then was out early on, and Ricciardo's car literally just died. And to make matters even worse, I've been told Ricciardo's had to replace the battery. So he's already down part of his power unit as well. as a replacement for the one that broke during Bahrain. So that could come back to bite him later in the season as well. A really, really bad day at the office for Red Bull on that one. But we've got to talk a little bit about Hamilton Verstappen again a little bit here. King, where is your view on this one? Because I know, like... Should we mention the post-race incident as well while we're here?
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, we should, because...
It feels like this was more like just a racing incident that escalated afterwards.
Yeah, in the post-race debrief, minor spoiler, Lewis Hamilton finishes third in the end. Gets to go on the podium. In the background footage, in the race highlights, in the Parc Fermé area, or the debrief room, they're replaying the highlights of the race, and they're replaying Verstappen's attempted pass on Hamilton. And Lewis says, in full view of the hard camera, when the micro's going to pick it up, he says, "Such a dickhead, man." And, oh boy. Yeah, you can tell Hamilton wasn't best pleased with that move from Verstappen, but... So you guys leading towards racing incident, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Like, okay. It was, I wouldn't say it was a 0% move from Verstappen, but it was low percentage that was going to work out in his favor.
And probably.
Reckless, yes. Punishable, not really.
Yes.
But that's the thing, I've mentioned it before, like, running a dude off the road is now basically legal in F1 now, so it's like, fuck it, if you can do it and you're Max, why wouldn't you do it, you know? So, it's...
Like, I would say the only reason he wasn't punished is because it ended his race.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
it was self-punishing. And then the drama of Lewis Hamilton's remarks about Verstappen took on a whole new life when one person was in Lewis Hamilton's corner. One Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, this is weird. This is very weird, but...
Is it really, though? Is it really, though?
Yes. Yes, it is.
the guy who's been literally the target of the press corps for almost a decade now.
What, for not being, like, you know, responsible enough for winning too much? Like, I just... Yeah, I get it. Like, it's a basic perspective, like, a Dutch journalist... During the post-race press conference, asks, basically, we heard you on the hard camera call Verstappen a dickhead. Like, could you explain the reasons behind that comment and like who did you blame for the incident during the race? Sebastian interrupts and says, "Can I answer this question?" And then the journalist says, "Sure." And Seb basically goes on the little monologue about basically saying that, you know, these... I'm paraphrasing here, so bear with me here, but he basically says that he's on the lines of, you know, this is something out of nothing, we're spinning this up to be a bigger deal than it is, we shouldn't be spinning it up so bad, you know, we all say things in the heat of the moment, if you put microphones on footballers... You know, in the middle of a tackle, you're probably going to hear things you probably shouldn't hear, etc. And, like, he said, don't take it personally, but he didn't appreciate shit questions like that, which I thought was quite funny. But, yeah, surprisingly, well, maybe not.
No, I did love that one line. If I punch you in the face and you said something like that was not you wouldn't just say something like that was not nice, Sebastian. You would be angry about it. Yeah.
All we needed was Chris Hemsworth taking that reporter out back and then jamming a tape recorder in his face, punching him right in the jaw.
Yeah, because funny enough, this was the same journalist who in Australia asked, "Is the next world champion Dutch?" Same dude. And I was
at least he's honest.
He's honest.
He's a bit of a mark. Like, you know, it's one of those things. Like, I said on Twitter this morning, the day we're recording this, which is April 9th, I said, listen, it was, like, people were torching this journalist, and I was like, listen, people, like, I understand why he asked that question. I don't think it was an unfair question to ask. Like, if anything, blame Lewis Hamilton for being dumb enough to call a dude a dickhead on the hard camera. That wasn't very clever.
No. That question was clearly entrapment. He was trying to get Verstappen in a conflict with the reigning world champion.
Good! That's more fun that way.
But it was, it's like, it's fun when it's legitimate. It's not fun when it's dude poking flames where there is no fire.
Like, listen, I'm not saying you can't call another driver a dickhead. Like, I absolutely... Listen, I'm here for all the fights, okay? We had a segment on this show called Bloody Fight Club, for crying out loud. I'm
but
here for
Dre. But Dre, if Lewis calls Verstappen a dickhead and there's no camera to see it, would we have ever known about it? No.
No, but what I'm saying is it's like pitching underarm to Barry Bonds. Of course a journalist is going to ask about it. Like, come on!
But then we would know about it, and there would be no rivalry to begin with if it was legitimate.
That's the beauty of Media King! Like, we get to comment on things like this. Now you've got two stories instead of one! Yay! It was fun. I will say that much. I thought it was funny, more than anything else. I'm not one of these dudes that is torching this journalist for that question. I understand why he asked.
It's all entertainment. We're here to have a good time.
Yes, and like I said, I didn't have a problem with that. That's just my opinion. Like, I thought Sebastian's answer was adequate, and it was fair, and, you know, it was from a good place. And if any, and as Will Buxton pointed out on Twitter, when other journalists got a bit pissed that Vettel, you know, can't make these comments because he's been angry before. No, that's exactly why Sebastian We all know that we all remember Mexico last season where he told Charlie Whiting to fuck off, right? And so, you know, like, if anyone can relate to talking about things in the heat at the moment, it's Seb, and that's probably why he chipped in the first place. Which is always fun when people in my inbox accuse me of saying, "Oh, Vettel is virtue signaling," which I swear no one uses that term in real life. But
people who use that term doesn't know what it means.
Exactly, but you know, that's always fun. Internet dialogue. Yeah, like, going back to the race for a minute here, like, the race kicks up strategy-wise around the halfway point. Like, Sebastian comes in from the lead, he puts on a pair of soft tyres, which kind of makes it evident that Ferrari's going to be two-stopping. Valtteri goes in the pits 2 laps later, puts on a pair of medium tyres, and we're like, uh-oh. Now, me in the Ferrari camp here was like, oh no, not again. I was like, especially when Valtteri came out, immediately set the fastest lap of the race. And I was like, why is the medium tyre faster than the softs? And, you know, it goes into some explanations as to, you know, tyre temperatures, you know, degradation, and again, tyre stuff, basically. But it turns out the mediums were just the better race tyre in that scenario. Which, you know, sucks if you're a Ferrari. Like, I was Ferrari, I was sitting there thinking, oh god, Seb's got a 2-stop. Oh god, like, Val's pace is really good. Oh no, we're not going to win this race. You've blown it again, god damn it. I'm going to torch Ferrari strategic-wise yet again on the podcast tomorrow. Not quite. Vettel...
Do we need to talk about how they tried to pit Raikkonen to undercut?
Yeah, I was just getting... I was just getting to that now. I was like, well, I thought Seb's bound to stop again. They pitted Raikkonen first, and disaster. An awfully botched stop. I think one of the tyres refused to come off the end of the car, and Raikkonen got an early green light. And unfortunately, a mechanic literally had his leg shattered as a result of Raikkonen running his leg over.
Yeah. I saw it live. I knew it was bad because he got clipped. When I heard he got a broken leg, I'm like, oh, okay, that's not great. When I heard just today that he had his leg broken in 2 places, and then he was walking after 1 day, Francesco Sigurini, the mechanic of Ferrari, oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a very beloved mechanic in the garage. I know a lot of people that have been to multiple Grand Prix, and he has time for everybody. He's a very well-liked guy in that Ferrari pit crew and paddock in general, so that was a bummer for poor Fran to her. It was broadcast, obviously, live on TV.
It was not, like, in a corner. It was, like, directly in front of the pit camera. Like, you see his leg in front of the tire. And I think in our Discord chat, I post the frame between when the car starts moving, but just before it hits his leg.
Oh God, King! Like, why are you torturing the other side of the Discord chat?
Hey, there are worse frames to post.
I mean,
oh, good.
That's true. That's very, very true. But why make us think about that?
No. Awful accident. Yeah, it's like apparently Channel 4 News zoomed in and slow-moed in it.
Oh,
and
my
media
God.
Channel 4 are masochists. What is wrong with them?
But
Jesus
Christ.
They're
free to air.
They're the edgy ones, you know.
They'd
Channel
be like, see where his leg bends in two places? None of those bends are his knee.
Oh. Oh, God. It's like that slow-mo scene in The Simpsons where you can see the moment where Ralph's heart breaks, and it's like, oh, no. Yeah, that was awful. Luckily, Fran is looks like he's going to make a full recovery. thank God for that. Awful to see that in real time and live on the broadcast. And that, amazingly, kind of gifted Seb the win in a sense because Ferrari was giving medical aid to Fran in the middle of that. They couldn't stop Vettel's car anyway, so they could tend to Fran. So Vettel basically at this point now had to stay out and do 32 laps on the soft compound tyre with Valtteri Bottas reeling him in on, again, the better, faster, medium tyre towards the end of the race. It was about a 5-6 second shootout with about 10 laps to go, and Val was about a second a lap quicker right up until the end of the race. It was a tense one. It literally came down to the final lap. Val was about 0.5 away. He had one crack at it into turn one. Didn't have the braking power to do it. Seb apparently was very strategic in modelling his power around so he could get the maximum out of that Ferrari down the home straight to try and do anything to stop that Merckx from coming through. He's able to hold off Val for the final lap, and then Seb takes the win in his 200th Grand Prix start. I believe his 49th career victory now. Good Lord, he's got 49 victories. That's terrifying. Yeah, like it's a magnificent performance from Seb, and if I do say so myself, and that it's an amazing thing that win did not look on for Seb. Not for about 30 laps. There, I thought, oh no. Like after the first stop, it's like, oh, you know what's going to happen.
Going by Autosport's guesstimate, They felt certain that Mercedes had a 90% chance of winning.
Yeah, 90. Way to beat the odds, Seb.
So much for that.
Yeah, this one looked like after the pit stop, it was going to be gift wrapped to Val on this one on a silver platter, and like it's amazing that, you know, Kimi Raikkonen's awful pit stop essentially gave Ferrari the win in that sense, because they were going to pit Seb with about 10 to go if it wasn't for that and put him out on the super softs. And
I
just
didn't
see
even think of it like that. I didn't even think of it like, what the hell happened?
Yeah. I don't know what Ferrari were thinking that the two-stopper was going to be. Like, Ferrari, I guess, were just super confident that their car was that much quicker than Mercedes they could afford to run a two-stopper. Turns out they weren't. It wasn't ideal, but it looks like they got away with it on this one. And Vettel joins a unique club of the fifth driver to win his 200th start alongside Jenson Button, Michael Schumacher, Nico Rosberg, and Lewis Hamilton. It's quite crazy how the five guys have won on their 200th start. I thought, what, five guys? Really?
Yeah, all world champions.
No, yeah, crazy. Yeah, Valtteri in second now. A couple of people asked me this on Curious Cat about Val, and was like, was this another reason that Val might not be around next year? I give Val a pass for this one. This really should have been a race that they should have won without even the need to have a dogfight in the end. I don't think Val was all that bad on paper. I just think he was more unlucky than anything else. Am I crazy for thinking this?
No, you're not crazy to think of that. And, I mean, in fairness, he did out-qualify and out-race his teammate Lewis Hamilton. Take that for what you will with what Lewis Hamilton had to go through all weekend, starting the weekend on the back foot. But this was it was a fine race for Val.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, how much shade are you going to throw at a guy for finishing 0.6 off the win? Like, really, it just wasn't his day, really. It happens. And, yeah, again, like, no one's going to, you know, put Val on a mantelpiece for that one, but I don't hold that one against him, really. Lewis Hamilton described the race's damage limitation. He eventually came up to third in the end, a solid podium finish. About the maximum that was realistically on the table for him, I'd argue, given the circumstances. But that triple overtake was something, hey, fellas?
Very
That's
awesome.
Going to be on a highlight reel.
Yeah, that'll be on the end of season overtake of the year competition for sure, because, triple pass into turn one, bonkers stuff. Lewis said it was damage limitation, and again, I think third was about the maximum he could have realistically gotten out of that one. Would have loved to have seen how he would have fit in if he didn't have that penalty. That would have been very interesting indeed, but not today. We mentioned the Red Bulls, but as a result of some of the attrition that was going on, looking at some of the results further down the field. Wait, that's a blue car in fourth, and it's not a Red Bull. It's Pierre Gasly!
Who's
Shadow Ball!
Driver of the day!
Pierre Gasly!
He used Shadow Ball, he was super effective. Pierre Gasly had a hell of a weekend. He qualified in sixth provisionally, got bumped up to fifth because of the Hamilton penalty. It's kind of crazy that the Best of the Rest award really goes to Pierre Gasly on this one, because we all know Honda have had their struggles, but they come here on a power circuit. They're competing against teams like McLaren, and Gasly finished almost a minute ahead of Fernando Alonso in fourth place. Phenomenal drive.
Yeah, he finished 37 seconds ahead of the worst Renault of Nico Hülkenberg.
Bonkers. What a drive from the young Frenchman. Seriously, that is super impressive. I think he said he had 89% of the driver of the day votes, they said. Wow. Kind of says it all, really.
Absolutely.
He absolutely deserved the highest, I think, a Honda has finished since, I want to say, 2008, when Rubens Barrichello got on the podium at Silverstone. Toro Rosso's best finish as a team since Carlos Sainz finished fourth at Singapore last year, and that was bonkers enough as it is. That team was absolutely, you see on F1's Instagram, that team was absolutely delighted with that fourth place, and can you blame them? Phenomenal performance from Pierre on that one. Brilliant, brilliant drive indeed. And if you go a little bit further down, Marcus Ericsson in ninth. His first point scoring for Sauber. Sauber's first points of the year. They're not bottom of the constructors, even though many of us predicted they would be. And Marcus Ericsson's first finish in the points in 50 races. Yeah, he's back in the points, everybody. Everybody break out the champers.
He's humbling Charles Leclerc a little bit.
Yeah, like, we were all on the Charles Leclerc hype train going in for obvious reasons and deserved reasons, of course. But, my goodness, Marcus has really stepped up his game in the wake of Charles around there. Charles was beating himself up after a mistake in qualifying where he spun it on the final corner on his final qualifying lap, and Charles was kicking himself in the car for it. But Marcus got his head down, was running as high as 6 foot 1 point before the one stopper, but the strategy from Alfa Romeo Sauber worked perfectly, and Marcus was in ninth. Again, brilliant drive from Marcus on that one, if you ask me. Exceptional stuff. Absolutely brilliant. Again, another one of those days where the attrition played a hand in that one for sure.
And
but,
remember when we mentioned Magnussen coming wheel to wheel with Esteban Ocon earlier in the race? Mm-hmm. He continued on and he came away with the fifth place that probably should have been his in Australia. A fifth place matching Haas's best ever Formula One result, and it didn't even really feel like a surprise.
Yeah, like Haas have been batting around that sort of range again since the test, so not all that surprising, but another very solid drive from K-Mag indeed. He's on a good run of form, and he seems to have dialed down the crazy a couple of notches, which is certainly good for him as well. Quick run out of the full result. Seb takes the win by 0.7 over Val in the end. Lewis Hamilton a further 6 seconds back. There's a bit of a gap. There's still a bit of a golfing performance here, kids. Pierre Gasly finished 56 seconds behind Lewis Hamilton in fourth. A minute and two off the win in fourth. But hey, it's still a fourth nonetheless. 12
points.
12 very hard-earned points for Toro Rosso indeed. Kevin Magnussen in 5th for Haas there, ahead of Nico Hülkenberg in 6th. Fernando Alonso, no 5 for him this time, only a 7, but he'll gladly take it. 7th ahead of his teammate Stoffel Vandoorne in 8th. Marcus Ericsson in 9th, as mentioned, for Sauber. Brilliant job from him. And Esteban Ocon gets Force India's first points of the year. Crazy to say about Force India, huh? In 10th ahead of Carlos Sainz in 11th. Charles Leclerc gets bumped up to 12th. I'll sort of explain why in a minute. Romain Grosjean in 13th place. Not such a good day for the Frenchman on this one. Lance Stroll and Sergei Sorokin in 14th and 15th for the ever-struggling Williams team. My goodness, they were nowhere all weekend. Demoted to 16th and 17th with 10-second stop-go penalties post-race was Sergio Perez and Brendan Hartley for Perez passing Hartley during the for formation lap, and then Hartley did not overtake him back. So they both got 10-second stop-go penalties for that, which just bumped him further down the standings, really. Didn't have a big difference to no points either way. But Perez in 16th place, Brandon Hartley in 17th. And, of course, the three DNFs, as mentioned, Raikkonen in the pit stop error and the two Red Bulls. So, kids, like, Sebastian Vettel leads the championship. Isn't this the part where you try and talk me into believing again now? Like, go on.
Give it another handful of races.
Yeah, I'll wait until Europe.
Oh, yeah? Well, you're not going to tell me to dig up the narcotic in the fridge? No?
No, it's fine. We're not the internet.
Should also point out as well, this is Lewis Hamilton's 27th consecutive point-scoring finish. He has now tied Kimi Raikkonen's record from 2012 to 2013.
Please take a gearbox failure in China. Please! Yeah, quick look at the driver's championship. Oh, yeah, Sebastian Vettel now leads by 17 points. He has the perfect 50 over Lewis Hamilton's 33. Valtteri Bottas on 22. Fernando Alonso is 4th in the championship right now with 16 points.
Last year he scored 17 points.
Kimi Raikkonen in 5th on 15 points, ahead of Nico Hülkenberg on 14, Daniel Ricciardo with 12, Pierre Gasly in 8th with 12 points, Kevin Magnussen with 10, and Max Verstappen with 8 points to round off the top 10. In the Constructors, Ferrari is still leading the Constructors' Championship. I know, I'm as shocked as you are. They have 65 points to Merckx, 55. McLaren are 3rd. This is not a drill.
This is
push the panic
F1.
Button. This is not a drill. McLaren Renault are 3rd. Seriously, they have 22 points. It's kind of bonkers. Red Bull's double donut puts them now in 4th with 20 points, ahead of Renault on 15, Toro Rosso on 12, and Haas in 7th place with 10 points. Sauber have 2. So Sauber up to 8th place, everybody. Go Sauber. They're not bottom. They're a point ahead of Force India in 9th. As mentioned, Ocon got their first point of the year in 10th on Sunday. And Williams, amazingly, the only team in F1 who has not scored a point yet. They have not had a car even finish as high as 13th yet. It is not going to plan for Williams at all. Oh, dear. We knew it was bad. I didn't know it was this bad. It's not a good sign for
that
team.
As I remarked down at the sports bar many a times, the drivers are going to take the blame for the car being absolutely terrible. I said it in preseason, and I fear the prophecy is about to come true. What can you do in that case? Also, me and the buddies had a celebratory shot of Jaeger. Our plan was to take a shot of the drink from the winning driver's nationality. Sebastian Vettel just happened to be German. Shots of cherry alcohol all around. It was a good, good time.
It's like, any more stories of RJ being drunk around the company of other people during a motorsports event? There's a lot of those going down this weekend. It's pretty neat, if I do say so myself. But yay, Seb won! Woo! No one's trying to talk me into going back on the narcotic yet. Thank God. Twitter. Yes, you know who you are. Alex.
But
Catherine.
There is,
Laura.
Hey, Dre, there is still a six-pack waiting in the fridge. Come about 2 weeks' time in China?
You're about to get these hands.
I don't know.
Oh, that's fine.
If Sebastian Vettel is in the lead of the championship after the Azerbaijani Grand Prix, I can definitely say that there's a legitimate chance.
We're not doing this, King. We're not doing this. Okay? Are we clear?
Well, I don't know. As the internet pointed out, you know, in 2016, when we were around this time last year, with the exact same points total, Nico Rosberg was ahead of Lewis Hamilton.
So you're saying it's at least going to be close.
Yeah, it's going to be close.
King, should we divert just a little bit and talk about... So if you remember a couple episodes ago, we went into F1 on ESPN in America a lot. And deservedly so. Like, that broadcast of the Australian Grand Prix was a train wreck.
I believe the phrase I used was chloroform in motorsports broadcasting.
Yeah, pretty much.
But ESPN, to their credit, took the feedback, and one company, Mother's Car Polish, a longtime sponsor of Formula One, going back to not just Formula One on NBC Sports, but Formula One on Speed Channel, and then subsequently Formula One on Speed Vision.
Yeah, they've been here.
And of course, their advertisements are very, you know, they're nonchalant. It's car product stuff. Like, yeah, it's whatever. It's fine. Mother stepped up and paid for this race to go commercial-free, flag-to-flag, on basic cable television. Not just for the race, but qualifying as well.
Yep, the entire weekend on basic cable, commercial-free.
Way to take one for the team there, fellas. That is awesome.
Oh, the internet memery of Mother's Car Polish being our new Lord and Savior is real.
King, you know what this means. We have to toast with a bottle of Mother's Car Polish and eat about 5 clay bars.
Yeah, we gotta eat all the clay bars. We're gonna eat clay bars like Hershey.
We are here for all of this. So it's props to Stu for the oil and the car polish to make that happen. That's awesome.
That is really, really awesome.
So
we had some proposals.
Yeah, I have a press release from our other Lord and Saviors over at Liberty Media to read.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, in just over 3 years' time, Formula One hopes to enter a new era that will feature a new car with a new engine that competes in a championship where the revenue distribution will be fairer and the cost controlled. Friday in Bahrain marked the first meaningful step in defining that future. In a 90-minute meeting, Formula One chairman and CEO Chase Carey and motorsport boss Ross Brawn presented Formula One's vision for the championship from 2021.
The future.
Ultimately, Formula One wants to create great action and bring the cars closer together, make the drivers the heroes, and make the business more sustainable. Controlling the cost and fairly distributing the revenues will play a big part in that. So, unsurprisingly, a key part, and it's a key part of the plan. And to run down the 5 points of their plan, kind of the 5 focuses are: 1, the power units; 2, the cost; 3, the revenue; 4, the sporting and technical rules and regulations; and 5, governance. And first point, most important to a lot of people, are the power units. 1, they're planning on making the power units cheaper, simpler, louder, have more power, and reduce the necessity of grid penalties.
Wait. More powerful? They're already packing 1,000 horsepower, they're claiming these days.
Not enough.
They want more power?
Not enough.
Is Jeremy Clarkson in charge of these regulations?
Damn it, give me 1,500 horsepower.
We're buying the Stage 4 turbo and just slapping it on there.
Yes.
Also to add on, it must remain road relevant, hybrid, and allow manufacturers to build unique and original power units. The new rules must be attractive to new entrants customer teams must have access to equivalent performance.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Andy Palmer of Aston Martin put out a press release saying that he was very pleased with this news. Aston Martin, also one of these companies that's very interested in getting Formula One, as their deal with Red Bull kind of hints towards.
And mm-hmm. it should also be tacked on that some fuel limits would be removed to allow the drivers to push. The fundamentals simplified so the fans can understand the engine. I don't know why. I understand it just fine. If fans can't understand it, that's their issue.
But King, you're a nerd.
Oh my god. Dre, you know what a turbocharger is, right, Dre?
It's the bit where the air goes in. Yeah, that bit. It makes the car go faster.
Shit. And most importantly, the hybrid component, such as the battery, would be standardized to cut costs.
Ooh, get McLaren to slap some batteries in there for everybody. Neat.
Quote from Ross Brawn, "It's a miracle of engineering, the engine we have now. But they are too expensive. I don't think they are a great racing engine. We want engines drivers can drive flat out all the time and which have more emotion. I don't know that, you know, moving pieces of metal and fuel and explosions can have emotion, but okay, Ross.
We need V10s, bruh! Bring back the V10s! We need them now!
V12s. V12s. Big shouting engines with more cylinders to burn more fuel.
I'm okay with that, too.
Yeah.
Bring them all. Okay. The heck with it.
Bring them all. We
had V8s, V10s, V12s. Why not?
Run what you brung. It's like a track day meeting all over
yes.
again.
Someone get the W12 out of Ernesto Vita's garage.
I am for that.
Okay, so focus. Moving on to focus number two, the cost. Quote, "We believe how you spend money must be more decisive than... more decisive and important than how much money you spend." Formula One would like to introduce a cost cap. Though
I just nodded everywhere! A cost cap! Yes! Sorry, gang, carry on.
Though the final number has not yet been decided.
Rumors are it's 150 million bucks, according to Brundl, the German media, and a couple other people that have floated that number around. So, roughly about 110 million sterling in Queen's English.
According to Ross, there's still debate on what the exact number would be, but it would not include driver salaries, which is a sticking point for Christian Horner, who believes that if there was a cost cap that didn't include driver salaries, the amount that drivers would get paid would explode. I don't believe that. I just think Christian Horner is cheap and does not want to pay his drivers.
Sebastian Vettel only got like 10 mil in his final season with the team. It's like, and this is the guy that just won them four consecutive championships. Like we're already in a sport where Lewis Hamilton gets over 40 million a year. It's like, if you're talking about driver salaries exploding, we're already there. Trust me.
Yes. And also, it would also not include marketing, because, quote, "Because in terms of developing a sport, developing a brand, teams should be free to do what they want."
Okay.
And also, in other efforts to reduce costs, it would mainly be focused at the larger teams who would most likely have to reduce their staffs. And there will also be a number of parts which will be standardized.
Have they talked about reducing the costs outside of just running the car? Because a lot of the teams have hospitality units that are just quite frankly ridiculous.
There is a reason why marketing is not included in the cost cap.
That's stupid. Yeah. Like, think about how much money it costs to put all that freight all around the world. It's ridiculous.
They choose to do that. It is not required. And they only use the motorhomes in Europe. Outside, like, all the flyaway rounds in Bahrain and other places like that, all the hospitality suites are already pre-built into the circuit.
Pre-built?
Yeah, like, if
it's
you've ever...
It's not just built?
Yeah, I mean...
Do they have pairs built as well?
I mean, they include, like, they bring their own things, like, you know, catering, whatever catering company they hire, they build their own cooking equipment and stuff like that.
So it just seems odd that they spend so much money on so much ostentatious hospitality.
They choose to spend that money.
It's stupid. It's outrageously stupid.
It's very stupid. It's fine.
But everything is great.
Yeah, everything is great. But besides that, the only notable thing to add to that was a quote from Claire Williams where she says, "I think it's a balanced figure. Obviously, whenever you talk about cost caps, there's going to be winners and losers, aren't there? And it's about compromise at the end of the day."
Yep, labor stoppages have happened in other sports, mostly due to salaries, salary caps, things of that nature.
People like
we're probably going to get another one in the NFL in about 3 years' time by the sounds of it. So, you know, it happens a lot in the US.
So, now on to the third focus of their plans, revenues. Quote, "F1's current revenue structure has long been a subject of debate. It is widely felt that the system is unfair and heavily weighted in favor of certain teams. Currently, part of this revenue pot is shared out between teams depending on their position in the Constructors' Championship. Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren, and Williams all then receive additional payments for various reasons, including past successes and commitment to the championship. From 2021, Formula One wants a fair and equitable revenue system. The plan is for teams to receive payments based on performance. There should be payments made to the teams as well as engine suppliers who commit to Formula One. Ferrari and Mercedes, who run their own engine programs, would get two payments, one as a team, two as an engine supplier, while Toro Rosso and their engine supplier will, you know, each get one payment as an example. This recognizes engine suppliers' commitment to Formula One, and it is also noted that all current additional payments will cease except for the bonus payments received to by Ferrari."
Yeah, we're gonna make this more fair and equitable, except for the part that, you know, inherently makes it fair and equitable when you just pay a team just for being themselves.
Yeah.
All teams are equal. Yeah. Some are more equal than others.
Right. I believe it was the Le Mans great Henri Pescarolo who once said, "Motorsport is not socialism." Well, in some cases, it does make us want to kind of embrace it a little bit harder.
Sure.
Yes. Following the meeting, Aston Martin president Andy Palmer, who was in attendance, was pleased with the current state of play as the British car maker continues to evaluate their plans to enter Formula One in 2021. I mean, it's great that Aston Martin are involved in the conversation, but I feel like they are inherently biased.
Really? I'll give it away, King.
The massive logo on the rear wing of the Red Bull.
Yeah, it's kind of a dead giveaway, isn't it?
But essentially, Liberty Media want to structure the payments to the teams in a way that long-term stability financially is what counts. And I think it's a good, you know, it's a good movement towards that. But, you know, the whole only Ferrari will retain their additional payments.
It doesn't seem to be an exact science.
Kind of, you know, a thing where they're not calling Ferrari's bluff here. They're not taking any chances.
Keep Ferrari happy and the rest will follow.
Yeah. Oh, so besides that, we move on to the fourth point. The sporting and technical rules and regulations. And the most important part of this is the cars must and will remain different from each other and maintain performance differentiators like aerodynamics, suspensions, and power unit performance. However, We believe areas not relevant to the fans need to be standardized. So there'll be more standardized components, but there will not be customer cars.
Oh no! that's kind of a bummer, actually. I was kind of looking forward to seeing if that was going to be put on the table, but yeah, more standardized parts isn't a bad compromise by any stretch.
Yeah. Like they continue, we must make cars more raceable to increase overtaking opportunities. Engineering technology must remain a cornerstone, but driver's skill must be the predominant factor in the performance of the car.
I say good luck with that. like, that's only going to work if the cars themselves are a lot closer together in terms of performance, where the driver margin, you know, has a greater scope. Because, like, the driver ability means sod all if, like, Force India is 2 seconds a lap slower than their Mercedes-powered counterparts on the factory team. It's a kind of a redundant point. But I guess it means well, you know, that's nice, I guess.
Yeah. The last point is the shortest point, governance. Liberty Media want a simplified and streamlined structure between the teams, FIA, and Formula One. They want to eliminate the strategy group. They feel like
it's, yes!
They feel like it's too cumbersome to work with and kind of stokes the conversation. Kind of makes it a situation where the teams are there for their own self-interest, not as the teams as a collective whole.
Burn it. Burn it to the ground. Burn the strategy group to the ground, please. I hate it. Nothing ever gets done because of that goddamn strategy group. Yes!
On that note, we need to talk about the meeting that happened the next day, on Saturday, the FIA's emergency overtaking meeting.
You know how ridiculous that sounds? it's like a KFC team meeting where it's like the emergency we ran out of chicken meeting. It's like, what is going on here?
So, the meeting called by the FIA's Nicolas Zambesis was a part of, it was a response to the Australian Grand Prix, and it was a meeting between him and all the other, you know, chief technical officers.
Now, just to clarify, this was not inadvertently sent out to everybody's phones in Hawaii during a shift change at the government building?
No.
Of course.
So, there were two main points of discussion to hopefully implement for 2019. One, a simplified front wing.
Oh.
Two, a bigger and higher rear wing, which means a bigger, more effective DRS.
Oh, God.
By the meeting's end, both ideas were completely rejected by all the teams.
Right.
Right, so we're still button heads on this one.
Yeah, technically the FIA could still, you know, propose this to the strategy group, but it's unless both Liberty Media and the FIA unanimously agree to run it, the teams are like, it's not going to be a thing. It is not going to be
no.
a thing.
No. If it's getting shot down there, there's no way it's going to be a thing.
Just go with the force majeure that they always go for safety reasons.
For safety. We need a simpler rear wings for all the birds out there. Think of the birds.
Look at all those slow-mo shots we get at Monaco. I mean, shit, we got to get rid of them, right?
But imagine how cool they would look with nose cam.
Nose cam. Mm. So, guys, what do you think? 2021, anyone?
I like it. There are not a lot of concrete ideas on how to get this. And I know people complain about that, but like they'll come out with it at some point. I mean, this is just a good outline to start with. If you're smart and you're writing an essay, you don't start with your final draft all one day. You usually do an outline, then a rough, and then a final.
Remember the last time we started with a final draft? And someone was like, hey, we're going to just assume the final draft is going to be the submitted version, Mercedes.
But King, aggressive aero. They'll be mean-looking cars.
No. Back in 2010, when we were coming up with the regulations for 2014, we were like, maybe we'll, you know, run hybrid V6s. And everyone's like, nah, that's not going to happen. Mercedes was like, we'll save that, tuck that away, go back home.
It's like that scene on the Grand Tour. It's like, Audi's like, you know that rule about four-wheel drive cars not being able to go into rallying? Can you just scrap that? And everyone's like, yeah, sure, fuck it. It will never come back to bite them, ever. so, you know. You're right. RJ is right. It is a little bit on the vague side. But, as you say, you got to start somewhere. This is obviously not going to be the final version. I think some of these bullet points are a little bit on the optimistic side. I mean, the power unit stuff. Cheaper, simpler, louder, more power, less penalties, but still road relevance. Like, you're talking about...
I think they could. Like,
you really think so?
Some of the tech guys are not going to like it, but they can do it. Like, we're probably going to have, like...
They're some of the greatest engineers in the world. If they can't do it, then who will?
Yeah. Because I think the way they get cheaper engines is the engines are going to get heavier, but they're going to be huge. They're going to be monstrous. People are going to love them. But the people who are into the technical side of Formula One, they're going to not. Like, you think that they don't like V10s coming back? They're not going to like the new massive V6s.
I want 1,200 horsepower. That you can run all day. Let's do this.
Yes, please.
Honestly, overall, I really like the direction that Liberty is going in here. They've addressed a lot of people's concerns by the looks of it. A lot of very fair criticism has come their way, and they seem to have taken that on board. I like the idea of a cost cap. It's probably the most effective way of at least giving some of the smaller teams a chance, especially hand-in-hand with a redone revenue system. So hopefully the smaller teams won't be able to spend up to that budget, per se, if you get my drift. Because I don't... If they have like a $200 million cap, hypothetically speaking, I don't think Sauber's going to spend $200 million in a season on their car. But, you know, hopefully... A bit of extra money on the side might make that a little bit more likely. Yeah. Overtaking is good. You know, engineering technology is good. Like I said, the cost cap is good. I like the ambition they're showing in the... If they can pull that off of the pilot, it's going to be friggin' awesome. Yeah. Like, Jesus.
Like, I think there's like just one quote from Chase Carrier that stands out. Quote, "We are driven by one desire, to create the world's leading sports brand." End quote. So he clearly is like taking aim at the FIFA World Cup and the Olympic Games.
And LeBron James.
And LeBron James. He's the world's leading sports brand.
And the Atlanta Braves.
Now hold on. There can't be any intra-company competition here.
But
don't worry. Yeah. That's not much of a contest.
No, it really isn't. But I said, overall, I like these. I think they're still a little bit on the vague side. I'd like to see a little bit more specific details, but obviously that will come a little bit nearer the time. But overall, I definitely like the direction they're going in. I just hope they can put it off and they don't compromise from this too much. Ferrari are probably going to, you know, throw their toys out of the pram and throw the pram into a ditch over some of these. I hope Liberty call their bluff and, you know, say, you know, we're not going to budge on this. I really, like, they've already hinted that, you know, Liberty are not keen to budge on this. They're non-negotiable on a lot of these points.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Essentially, yeah. What Liberty have said is that points are up for discussion, but they're not up for removal. Anything that they propose so far, it has to be implemented in any way, shape, or form. So, if teams don't agree with anything that they proposed, they've shown them the door. They can leave.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 2020 is the end of the Concord Agreement anyway, so they wouldn't even have to pay a financial penalty to leave anyway. So, you know, It's the perfect time for it, essentially. So yeah, like I said, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, King. I mean, you're a bit more technical minded than I am, but I like this overall.
Yeah, of course I like this, Dre. Of course I like this.
I wasn't sure. I wanted to make sure, okay?
like
Chris, is
moment...
it good?
Yeah.
the moment I heard the word cost cap, I was like, I'm on board. Like, I don't know what the cost cap
is. I'm in.
Yeah. But, like, one thing that they specifically mentioned about the cost cap, that it would be prospective, so if you're caught infringing on the cost cap, like, the next year, they're not going to go full NCAA and start retroactively taking away championships. You would be penalized that season.
Okay. Makes sense.
Gotcha. Before we wrap everything up for this episode, rate the race? Rate Bahrain?
Ooh, I want to go 9. Like, I don't want to go 9.5. I'm definitely not going 10, but it's definitely a solid 9.
Go in about 8.5 mimosas out of 10.
Yeah, I'm gonna say eight slightly retired Red Bulls on the side of the road out of 10. That race had a little bit of everything for me. We had overtakes, some great action, genuine intensity and drama right the way to the finish. We actually had a battle for the win. We had some shock results in the midfield, which is always nice to see. Again, Gasly was fantastic, Ericsson was fantastic, Stoffel van Dorn was pretty darn solid as well. It had a little bit of everything, and that absolutely is probably going to end up being one of the better races of 2018, probably, where by the time it's all said and done, you know, an average F1 season is good for about 3 or 4 of those a year. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was an excellent Bahrain race, definitely one I think you should go out and see. If you haven't already. And I think that'll just about call it for episode 131. We'll be back probably in a couple of days, actually. Well, in the case of us, some minutes from now to record episode 132. But in the meantime, places you can find us quickly one more time, YouTube and Facebook.com/Motorsport101, Twitter @Motorsport_101, @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, @RJ O'Connell and @CDeHarde on Twitter, and of course our Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. As mentioned, if you haven't already, check out Bike Live if you get a chance. Again, I'm going to put it up on Patreon for just $1 on early access on that one, because it's kind of a big deal, to say the least. You're just going to have to trust me on this one, okay? Make time in your schedules. More on that soon. But I might give away a little bit of what happens in episode 132. Who knows? There's a reason to come back. But in the meantime, I've been Andre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell, Ryan King, and Christopher DeHarde. And until next time, thank you very much for listening. And we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
See you.
Bye.
Done it, mate.
I cannot believe
you are the world champion.
Like, King just sounded extra country on that ending. Like,
yep, you gotta thank our new Lord and Savior, Mother Scar Polish, in association with Liberty Media.
God, I could just eat like 5 clay bars right now. It's gonna make the surface of my inner lining smooth as glass, ready for polishing and buffing. You don't want your guts to do that.